from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will be the year in rebuke continued, mainly focusing on the campaign. But first, some news from the digital wonderland, because it's a wonderment. It's a puzzlement, but it's a wonderment. Australia is going the same silly way we are, the mandating of the turning off of the analoging of the television thing, not quite as soon as we are. But they're trying to entice Australians into the digital wonderland with new channels on a setup called Freeview. Digital television has been available in Australia since January 1, 2001. But just over half Australian households have gotten digital television in 7 years. So the people voted. So it's now the end of 2013 when analog goes off in Australia. And the problem now, according to executives in the television industry, such as Steve Allen, no, not the one you're thinking of Fusion Strategy. He's a strategist. Says the growth in the number of available channels looks good because there's more choice for viewers, but in reality, the effect is just to spread the content thinner. Well, that didn't happen here with cable. Do you really think there's an abundance of high-quality, desirable programs sitting on shelves anywhere in the world? Asks Mr. Allen to the Sydney Morning Herald. What is being brought to free-to-air networks increasingly is low-grade tosh. Hey, on the LGT network, that's all they feature is low-grade tosh. Says another analyst, Ben Willey of Initiative Media, you have to remember that consumers like benefits, not technology. For TV networks, the mandated second channel on the digital tier represents not a bonanza but a headache. What made the commercial network so powerful for so long was their ability to deliver a mass audience to advertisers. Their new channels dilute an already fragmenting audience. According to Senator John Thune from one of the Dakotas, Congress has been talking with the FCC about possibly extending the February 17th deadline for the turning off of the analog TV in this country. Thune says it's at least being talked about because many Americans don't understand the process or haven't yet redeemed their coupons for digital converters. Oh, by the way, if they haven't, U.S. consumers who wait too long to request government coupons to subsidize converter boxes for the digital transition may come up empty-handed, according to a regulator. Due to a last-minute rush of coupon requests, demand may exceed supply in the coming month, said the Department of Commerce official overseeing the subsidy program. Of course, you already know that if you wait more than 90 days after getting your coupon before redeeming it or trying to redeem it, it's expired and you can't renew it. Because it's the digital wonderland, that's why. And from a listener, Dear Harry, thought you might find this entertaining. I work for the local transit district in Santa Cruz as a bus driver for whatever reason. We are not permitted to pay cable satellite for service, and so we're stuck with over-the-air broadcasting. Our yard was first to receive a digital converter box. It helped eliminate the annoying fuzzy picture and has given us five or six stations. Secondly, and much to my dismay, someone purchased a box for our downtown break room. I watched the driver who purchased the box fool with the box and digital rabbit ears for 15 minutes one morning, trying unsuccessfully to get those same five to six channels we have at our yard. It finally dawned on me what was wrong. Our yard has a tall, older-style kite antenna on the side of our building. Our downtown bus station is your run-of-the-mill concrete and steel government building, pretty much making it impossible to receive any signal well enough to register with the box. As of this morning, the TV has only two stations to choose from. Yay, digital television. It's a wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. Step on in. Now, the Year in Rebuke campaign edition. And, of course, it began in Iowa. Hello, welcome to the show.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, your daily update on the sidelights and down low on the headlines. Up to here.
Up to hear CPR's Once Daily, Once Over, Not So Lately on the trends behind tomorrow's former trends. I'm Michelle Nabel.
And I'm Milton Getzler.
The political primary season has moved on to South Carolina, Nevada, and Michigan. But in the wake of the New Hampshire primaries, there's something of a wake-up call for punditry and pollistry.
The disparity between the pre-election polls, the exit polls, and the final results in the Democratic primary was startling, if not stunning, or vice versa. And in the aftermath of the stun or startle, one question stands out. Why? Followed closely by how? Today, we're up to here with the answers.
Dr. Kenneth Krell is polling director for the CPR poll. Dr. Krell, I guess you've been crunching and recrunching the numbers these last few days.
Mm-hmm.
What do they tell you?
Michelle, there are certain known variables that can affect the accuracy of a poll. The size of the sample, the randomness of the sample, and the response rate. Beyond that, of course, the crucial factor is the construction of the questions. A poorly constructed question can lead to results that, while accurate, may be of limited usefulness.
Mm-hmm. For example?
For example what?
Well, for example, anything. Just exemplify, if you will.
Well, as a matter of fact, on our last poll before the New Hampshire voting, we had a misprint in question 14. Now, our employees are trained to ask the questions as printed, for the sake of both consistency and reliability. So that misprint was repeated to each respondent.
Mm. So the question was?
As printed it was, are you planning to vote in the primary tomorrow? And the responses were, frankly, predictably, and overwhelmingly, no, I'll probably be staying in town. Now, that may well have been an accurate picture of the travel plans of our sample, but let's just say it didn't make the 5 p.m. newscast.
But misprints weren't a significant factor in the disconnect, if you will, between the poll results and the vote counts, were they?
So far as we've been able to determine, no. But they said I was on for 3 minutes, so I...
Well, Dr. Krell, was there something systematically wrong with the pre-election polls and the exit polls?
It depends what you mean by systematically.
It would also depend what I mean by wrong, I suppose.
That's pretty good bad. So far, we're pretty satisfied with the methodology we used. We're looking right now at the deeper layer, the actual methodography. And by the end of next week, we'll have completed an unprecedented methodostomy.
Yeah.
Then I think we'll have a much better idea of what we're looking at or for.
Dr. Krell, thanks so much for getting us up to here.
No pleasure.
What the pollsters think went wrong is one thing. But what do people in New Hampshire think happened last Tuesday? CPR's Ira Zipkin has been looking into it. Now he's looking up and talking to us.
On Bedford, New Hampshire's main shopping street, Vermont Street, the coffee spot is like a Starbucks and a Red Lobster rolled into one. That's where we assembled a representative sampling of whoever was walking by yesterday morning to share a cup of coffee, or a beverage of their choice, not to exceed $1.50, to talk about the election and the polls.
You see, you have to start with the basics. Queen Elizabeth of England is the greatest dealer of illegal drugs the world has ever seen. Everything else just flows from that.
Well, it just seems obvious. We still don't know why Building 7 at the World Trade Center came down. So, how are we supposed to know how these polls went so wrong?
I don't talk to pollsters. Nobody I know does either. I mean, I'm talking to you, but, you know, this isn't really a poll. I mean, like, you know, we're just sitting here, but, you know, you're not writing anything down except for the price of my espresso grande.
In the towns where the votes were hand-counted, Obama won, where they were machine-counted, Hillary won. So, the first question you have to ask is, how did they count the poll results?
I don't really have an opinion on the polling. You know, I was just hoping somebody in here could tell me, you know, how to get back on the interstate.
Well, I'm kind of ashamed to admit it, but I lied to the person who called me up. You know, so maybe like I helped screw up the polling or something. I mean, she said, you know, would you like Verizon DSL for $21 a month? And I told her, you know, I'm sorry, I already had it. You know, like I didn't.
People in the coffee spot may not know what went wrong with the polls, but they're not letting that stop them from having an opinion about it. I'm Ira Zipkin at the coffee spot. No, he's paying for his own grande. Thanks.
While our interview with Dr. Krell and Ira's piece were being aired, we had a focus group of scientifically selected people listening to them in Studio 3C. And CPB Opinionomics consultant Ed Spinkle is here in Studio 3B now to analyze the results.
Very, very volatile experience for these people, Michelle. The timeline graph is all over the place. Great instantaneous reactions to so much of what they heard.
Well, for example?
Well, most of our group really liked the young man who doesn't talk to pollsters. There was a strong negative reaction to the man who was lost. A couple of the focus group members said that he should have gone to a gas station.
Any overall impressions of the polls and or the pollsters?
We try not to ask any and/or questions, Michelle. Mm-hmm. But this group's strongest reaction to Dr. Krell was about two-thirds of the way through his interview. Several group members said they wanted to know more about methodostomy and specifically whether it's painful.
Ed, your overall take on the focus group's reaction to what they heard about the polling problems in New Hampshire?
On the whole, Michelle, they feel like there's more to this story than we know right now. Mm-hmm. They're taking most of them a wait-and-see attitude, except for a couple of our folks who don't watch the news, and I guess the best way to describe their attitude is wait and don't see.
Ed Spinkle, thanks.
My problem.
And from us, for now, you're up to here. Support comes from the American Corn Refiners Council, reminding you that corn is the fast lane to the future.
Tomorrow, more of the ebb and flow of the day's events, reaching from the far corners of the world to up to here. I'm Michelle Nabel.
And I'm Milton Getzler from Up to Here. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And then in March, Senator John McCain delivered a speech. It was, I believe, in Amman, Jordan. And during it, he was a bit confused. He had said originally that Iran was supporting the al-Qaeda fighters in Iraq. And then Senator Joe Lieberman, who was accompanying him on the tour, leaned over and whispered, no, it's Iran is supporting the two different groups because Iran is Shiite and al-Qaeda is Sunni. And Senator McCain corrected himself and then began a series.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, a special report, a foreign policy misspeech by Senator John McCain, with interpolations as needed by Senator Joseph Lieberman. Now, misspeaking from the Legacy Foundation in Owings Mills, Maryland, Senator John McCain.
Thank you, my friends. It is a privilege for you to be here to listen to me address you here today.
It's a privilege to address you today.
Privilege for me to address you today, of course. And, of course, I speak to you at a time when the question of America's security could be more urgent.
Could not be more urgent.
Could not be, of course. How could it be? It couldn't, is the straight answer, my friends. Let's look at the international scene and see how it stacks up in terms of this nation's security. Because, my friends, when you get right down to it, if there is a more important issue in this election, I wouldn't like to know what it is.
No, you would like to.
Or, if you like, I would like to know what it is, because, of course, it isn't. Now, let's take the Middle East, my friends, which has been the scene of so much tension and bloodshed during our lifetimes. Now, whatever you think of the Iraq invasion, and of course, I think Saddam Hussein was a tyrant who sponsored terrorism around the corner.
Around the world.
Around the world is where he sponsored it, of course. But whatever you think, the Middle East has become a more dangerous place.
Less dangerous
place as a result. Today, Iraqis are enjoying more electricity each day than they did under Saddam Hussein.
Less electricity.
Or, if you like, less electricity. There is less unemployment than there...
There's more.
More unemployment than there was under the tyrant. But, of course, that employment was tyrannized, my friends, utterly tyrannized. And we all know that we did not embark upon this struggle just to improve the economic circumstances of the Iraqi people. We don't know why we embarked.
We do know.
We do know why we embarked on this struggle. It was to ensure lower oil prices.
It wasn't to ensure lower.
I've got it. It was not to ensure lower oil prices, my friends, nor was it to remove weapons of mass destruction which we knew Saddam possessed.
It wasn't to remove WMDs which he didn't possess.
Or if it was, he didn't. But very simply, my friends, we embarked on this struggle to confront the jihadists and the jihadists and the mujahideen. What he said, who pose an existential threat to the United States, a threat against which we cannot prevail.
We can.
Against which, I say again, which we cannot but prevail. That is to say, we can. I supported this war when I opposed the way it was being fought. I support it now that I support the way it's being fought, and should I become your president, and should I once again oppose the way it's being fought, I will still support it. Is that right?
That's what you wrote.
Why would I...
If you become president, it will be fought the way you support.
And if I become your commander-in-chief, it will, of course, be fought the right way, the way that points to an immediate or short-term victory.
To achieve.
The way that leads to the only kind of victory worth having, one that must, may yet cost us years and billions, trillions of dollars. So the question is, my friends, will it be worth it in terms of our nation's security? Well, let's just look around the Middle East for a minute.
A moment.
See, that's not really worth correcting. Iran is weaker than it was when we toppled Saddam Hussein.
They are stronger.
Or rather, they're stronger, which is why our toppling days, shall we say, may not be over. Libya has renounced nuclear weapons, my friends, and rejoined the family of nations. And North Korea, which hasn't, fortunately for us, is not in the Middle East.
That's right.
Good. What we face with our Democrat friends this fall is an election that will decide whether we pursue the successful surge strategy and refuse to let it wind down.
And let it wind down.
And refuse to not let it wind down, I should say. Or, as our Democrat friends would have us do, and wind it up and surrender. So wind down or wind up, to oversimplify, and not to put too fine a point on it. Either we let al-Qaeda trumpet to the world that they have defeated us, or if I'm president, we remain steadfast with a strategy that will, if you will, mute al-Qaeda's trumpet. The decision, my friends, is up to the Iraqis.
It's up to us.
But it's really, if you want some straight talk, it's really up to the American people. As we begin the fifth year of...
Sixth year.
Or rather, end the fifth year of this difficult battle, the question is not, my friends, was it worth it? The question is, would not fighting this war have been more worth it? I hope you'll agree with me, the answer to both questions is yes.
First question. I'm not through with the speech. The answer to the first question is yes.
The answer to the first question is yes. So we'll start with the second question. Thank you very much, and God bless Armenia.
America.
And even more importantly, America.
You've been listening to Senator John McCain.
part of his Miss Speaking Tour on the subject of America's foreign policy future. Funds for this special broadcast came from the Fund for Special Broadcasts. I'm Ira Zipkin. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. A senior federal banking regulator approved a plan by IndyMac Bank. I know, it sounds like a burger place, but it's a bank. It was. To exaggerate its financial health in a May federal filing, which allowed the California company to avoid restrictions that it should have complied with only 2 months before it collapsed. This according to the Treasury Department's Inspector General, Eric Thorson. He found that the regulatory agency allowed similar ledger domain by other banks. The agency, the Office of Thrift Supervision, blessed a fiction, in the words of one congressional staffer. What IndyMac Bank was allowed to do was to backdate the depositing of some funds, which allowed it to remain in a position where it had enough capital, supposedly, on its books to back up its loans and debts. Otherwise, it would have had to go into uh-oh land much sooner, and maybe at less cost to the taxpayer. The role of the Office of Thrift Supervision, as the name implies, is to supervise these banks, says Republican Senator Charles Grassley. The regulator named in Thorson's letter, Daryl Dochow, was removed from his position this week as director of Office of Thrift Supervision's West Division, which supervised Washington Mutual, goodbye, Countrywide, bye-bye, IndyMac, bye-bye, and Downey Savings and Loan. Uh-oh. It's the second time Dochow, the regulator, has been removed from a position as a senior thrift regulator. This is the grown-ups, ladies and gentlemen. He was demoted in the early 1990s after federal investigators found that he had delayed and impeded the proper regulation of the failed Lincoln Savings and Loan run by Charles Keating, master of the Keating Five. Hello, John McCain. So Dochow, he's a two-time winner as a regulator, did not return phone calls from reporters. And in another illustration of the failed voluntary market-based environmental programs, the Office of Inspector General of the EPA has just released a critical audit of the Energy Star program. Energy Star is that voluntary program that has appliance manufacturers put their energy performance on a label. Because I'm going to buy that fridge because it's an Energy Star Plus. The set of voluntary programs to reduce greenhouse gases we reviewed use outreach efforts to recruit program partners and reduce emissions. We found it unlikely these voluntary programs can reduce more than 19% of the projected 2010 emissions for their industry. From this, we determined, says the IG, that if the EPA wishes to reduce these emissions beyond this point, it needs to consider additional regulatory policy options. So enough of the voluntarism. Let's get regulatory. News from the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And of course, as the primary season wound along and Obama piled up victories in the caucuses, the question increasingly became, should Hillary stay in the race or pull out?
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, at Loggerheads. Synchronously disparate views from both sides of the political spectrum in random order. Today, should Hillary Clinton pull out of the race for the Democratic presidential nomination? On the left, Joan Rivers. On the other left, Yakov Smirnoff.
Joan, if this Democratic primary race goes on another week or two, it will have lasted longer than most TV series, including yours. This isn't a race for the nomination anymore. It's a high-stakes game of chicken. In Russia, chickens play game of human. What a country. Let's face it, Joan. Barack Obama has won this competition. He's a great unifying figure. He's black and he's white. He's American and he's African. He's truly embodiment of American dream. In Russia, dreams forget you. So why not end this thing before the Republicans make 30-second spots out of everything both of them are saying? In Russia, TV spots watch you. What a country. Having endless arguments over whose supporter said what embarrassing thing means country doesn't get to hear discussion of issues we truly care about, like tax breaks for Branson. In Russia, they have something like Branson, too. There, entertainers go to watch washed-up audiences. What a country. Smart thing to do, Joan, is for Hillary Clinton to end her campaign right after Pennsylvania. Win, lose, or vote count changed by Putin. Then she throws support to front-runner, and then Democrats can spend their four-day convention doing what they're supposed to do, making fun of John McCain's age. Let's face it, Americans want change. And every time they see Bill Clinton trying to defend his wife, it looks less like change and more like rerun. Speaking of reruns in Russia, nobody loves Raymond. What a country. Joan?
Oh, please, Yakov. Women are tired of getting advice from men about how they should get off the stage and back in the kitchen. Bulletin for men. Hillary can't cook. I mean, please. Last time her hands touched a spatula, it was to chase Monica out of the Rose Garden. And I mean, come on. Saying Barack Obama has won this race is like saying Melissa's found a new husband. It'd be nice to believe it, but I wouldn't bet my QVC jewelry collection on it. I know this is public radio, but I had to get the plug in or my people would kill me. Yakov, people keep saying that for Hillary to catch Obama's delegate count is mathematically impossible. Well, so is the way honeybees fly. Or for that matter, American Airlines. Please, have you seen what they call first class lately? It's true. It takes me all the way back to what I sat on in my first class. Besides, Yakov, everybody knows Obama can't win. He's got a reverend who's crazier than Al Sharpton on Grammy night. He's got less executive experience than Elliot Spitzer's hooker. And he's totally out of touch with regular people. Oh, he may have his ear to the ground, but that's just because it's too big to fit on his shoulder. My God, with ears like that, the man shouldn't be running for president. He should be the lead in the Broadway production of Dumbo. Look, Yakov, there's only one good reason to want Hillary to quit the race now. It's so we don't ever have to look at that horrible yellow suit with the black piping ever again. That's like the flight attendant uniform for a hot air balloon. Please. But it's great for the Democrats that whoever wins the nomination has to go through all these months of attacks from the other side. If it lasts long enough, Katie Couric might even get to moderate a debate. From the left, I'm Joan Rivers.
And from other left, I'm Yakov Smirnoff. And there's one race we both agree on.
The race to be at loggerheads.
At Loggerheads is produced with the help of a grant from the Fund for Making Grants to Shows Like This. Next time, another pair of perfectly matched dichotomous views on an issue of public importance. At Loggerheads. I'm Ira Zipkin. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And of course, in the event Senator Obama did win the Democratic nomination, I'm sure this is no news to you, and I believe it was on the night that that was confirmed that he made a public appearance. He and his wife, Michelle, shared a little personal gesture of congratulations on stage, which later became transmogrified in the words of a Fox News anchor, later fired, as a terrorist fist jab.
A fist bump, a pound, a terrorist fist jab? The gesture everyone seems to interpret differently. Terrorist fist jab. Jab. Everyone seems terrorist different. Seems terrorist. Bump. seems terrorist. Pound seems terrorist. Jab seems terrorist. Terrorist seems terrorist. Interpret differently. A fist bump. Bump, bump. A fist bump. Bump, bump.
And then, after a bewildering period of time during the summer, where nothing really seemed to happen in the campaign except some TV commercials, it was almost convention time. And the speculation was who would be Senator Obama's vice presidential pick and what would Hillary Clinton do at the convention?
Clinton something, the campaign years.
Okay, we gotta have a reaction to Obama's Veep choice. We gotta have it yesterday.
James, hold your horses, man. This isn't the war room anymore.
Well, it's not exactly the peace room, either.
Just give us a couple minutes to talk this over, James.
Okay.
Without you in the room.
Gotcha. I'll go try to corral some pumas.
Well, here it is. The end of our road. The journey is finally over. The great adventure is behind...
Oh, hell, you sound like Bob Costas on the last day of the Olympics. Knock it off. This ain't the end of anything. We got a very interesting week ahead of us.
Now, Bill, just give it a rest. We've lost. They're throwing us a bone. Let's just put out some gracious statement and go have a nice meal somewhere outside Denver.
Not sure that's possible. But look at here, Hill. If I'd given up when it looked like the whole thing was stacked against me...
You wouldn't have gotten impeached. Please, spare me the inspirational lecture. Save it for Wednesday night at the convention. You don't want John Kerry to upstage you.
He couldn't upstage me if he was speaking from the seat of a Harley with a hooker on each leg. Look, hon, you heard Obama. He had three criteria for his vice presidential pick. You know, remember what they were?
I forget. I must have been dozing during that news cycle.
First, someone who isn't Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. Second, someone who isn't married to Bill Clinton. And third, someone who isn't the mother of Chelsea Clinton. I mean, this couldn't have been more personal if he'd just actually come out and said that.
Bill, I've done virtually nothing for 3 weeks, and I'm still bone tired. I love it that these angry women still support me, but do I think it means anything? It means we can screw up his convention.
Yeah, And you think that's a bad thing? Look, hon, in 4 years, you'll still be younger than John McCain is today.
Gee, that makes me feel all girlish and spring-like.
Wow. Didn't know that's how you wanted to feel at this point. Anyway, these Puma women don't need my help to stand in the way of the steamroller.
No, but they got it anyway. Maybe it was some of the good old boy language in the emails from the good old girls, but
hey.
Hey,
you punch with the gloves that they brung you. Nobody's going to believe that stuff came from the first black president. Nobody. Now, how about this? You make a statement expressing respect for the process and for Senator Obama's right to select the candidate of his choice.
Mm-hmm.
Then we tell Dean's people and the Obama folks, thanks very much for letting your name be put in nomination for president. And there's just one more thing, which is that we'd like your name to be put in nomination again the next day for vice president. Then we leak that request to the Puma caucus, and then we sit back and watch the fur fly and have a nice low-calorie burger here in the suite.
Bill, you've repaid me. Debt canceled. You couldn't quite be trusted to do a 60 Minutes for me, but you came close. No need to keep proving you think it's my turn. It isn't. I'll go back to the Senate. I'll campaign for Obama. He'll lose. And maybe if I'm lucky, I'll vote against the resolution for authorizing war on Iran. Let's eat.
Hun, nothing I like better than to eat.
Almost nothing.
Let's not go there. Not many people could pull off two simultaneous regimens of denial, but now, look, Carville and I have been talking to state party chairman. I tell you, hon, they're more nervous than the bride who stumbled into the stag party. They keep remembering you saying Obama can't win. They're looking at the polls, and all of a sudden, they got worse buyer's remorse than grandma with an iPhone. This is a guy, after all, who wouldn't lift a finger to repay your $10 million campaign debt to your own self. What kind of Democrat is that?
Yeah, it does kind of stink.
You know how many damn speaking engagements I got to go on because Senator Obama was too hoity-toity about what money goes where to get off his high horse and get his hands dirty? At least a dozen. A dozen nights where I'm out on the road.
So, what's the plan? I do a secret appearance at the Puma Caucus. I signal my intention to fight for the nomination. We do meetings with state chairmen. We let them do the leaking. We unlock some pledges. And we still lose?
Hey, did I steer you wrong about buying stock in Pinkberry? We're not going to lose. The SS Obama is sinking, and nobody with half a brain wants to be foxtrotting on deck when the iceberg hits. They're going to all be yelling at each other at some party tonight, yelling over the music, that if we're going to lose in November, let's at least go down fighting with somebody heading the ticket who's not too proud to kick an old man in the nuts.
I hate myself for believing you. But I do.
Okay, then. Cool.
Oh, man. That is one angry crowd of fine lesbian women. What we got?
Youthful angst and middle-aged thirst for power. Together, they add up to Clinton something, the campaign years.
Yeah, oh, how the memory fades so quickly. The Puma Caucus, ladies and gentlemen, at the run-up to the Democratic Convention, was a group of women who were so upset that Hillary Clinton had not won the nomination. They adopted the slogan, "Party Unity, My A blank blank," hence the word Puma. Anyway, this is Le Show. The year in rebuke continues. The Republican convention, of course, was marked by John McCain's surprise pick of a previously obscure governor from Alaska as his choice for a running mate. Sarah Palin blasted onto the national scene. Among the things she was first noted for, so much came afterwards, was her claim that she had opposed the notorious piece of pork known as the Bridge to Nowhere until it became known that before Congress decided to vote down the Bridge to Nowhere, she'd been in favor of it. So one could only conclude she had severe ambivalence toward the Bridge to Nowhere.
When I'm asleep, you're in every dream, but can you be as grand as you seem? You span the miles. Why, I really don't know. You promise a journey, but where do you go?
Bridge to nowhere.
I'm under your spell. If you were a in your walls I would dwell.
Bridge to nowhere.
Please set me free. Oh, how I wonder loved you. I thought you could help cut short my commute to the moose and the elk. But you became a notorious curse. My dreams are driving right into reverse.
Bridge to nowhere.
You're under my skin when my world is at stake. Forsaking you is no sin. The money, honey, you're on your own. Okay, take me to the bridge.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The former owner of a mortuary transport company, who hid three bodies for more than 5 years in his van, has apologized on a highway billboard that begins, quote, "I should treat the deceased in my care with dignity and respect." Donald Short. Of Hearst, Texas, was arrested when the bodies were found after his abandoned van was repossessed. Donald Short has not apologized to me, said Cheryl Jacobs, who thought her father had been cremated. She believed she had his ashes in an urn on her mantle. What she had, in fact, was dirt and leaves on her mantle. She was shocked when police notified her 5 years later that her father's body had been found in the van. But a billboard apology apparently not enough. Edinburgh, Scotland health chiefs have apologized after a mother was forced to give birth on the floor of an operating room after pleading in vain with staff to take her to the hospital's labor ward. She spent hours in the maternity unit's waiting room before eventually giving birth while fully clothed and standing up. She said she was later told there had been a vacant room in the labor ward all along. Some customers calling the customer relations hotline on a Fisher-Price DVD are getting an invitation for relations of a different sort. Mattel's Fisher-Price unit apologized this week for including an incorrect telephone number for customer service on the back of a DVD sleeve. It's actually the number for an adults-only hotline. Hey, kids, have fun with this. Fisher-Price said it has taken prompt action to remedy the situation and added that process improvements have been made. It's been printed on a DVD. How do you remedy that? Silence from the Fisher-Price representative in the room. Deadline Tokyo, Japan's production of cars, trucks, and buses marked its steepest drop in at least four decades in November. Vehicle production in Japan, home to Toyota and other major automakers, plunged 20%. Toyota Executive Vice President Akio Toyoda, with a D, apologized for the public concern that Japan's top automaker has set off by forecasting its first operating loss in seven decades. The overall world economy is said to be facing its worst crisis in 100 years, he explained. Okay, that makes me feel better then. 100 years? Dateline San Antonio, Texas, the entrepreneur. And yes, that is the trouble with the French. They don't have a word for entrepreneur. The entrepreneur behind Body Solutions, a Texas-based product that promised to slim users while they slept. Well, there's a believable premise. That entrepreneur has been sentenced to 37 months in prison for lying to federal regulators about his assets. 53-year-old Harry Siskind pleaded guilty earlier this year. His lawyers had sought probation for Siskind, who had apologized in court, but the judge instead imposed a maximum penalty. He was also fined $10,000. Body Solutions was widely marketed through radio and newspaper ads in the Dallas area, and we know how thin those people are. The product was said to work overnight. The apologetic Siskind, after sentencing, unsuccessfully tried to get court security to let him out the back door to avoid reporters. Then he gave the one-finger salute to the media as he ran out of the courthouse and jumped into a waiting, shiny new Cadillac. That's an apology with a difference. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, the co-host of the daytime talk show The View, received an apology from the White House after she complained of not receiving her usual invitation for the Christmas party there. Hasselbeck, who is the conservative co-host of the show, or ho-host, had spoken about it during the taping of the program. Maybe I didn't do enough for the Republican Party this year. I love Christmas cards. I love getting them. There's one in particular I usually like, and it's an invitation to the White House Christmas party, not the big one, but the 20th one down the road. You get the leftovers at the party. I'd be going to that one. No invitation this year, she complained. Oh, that was me. That just faded out. No invitation this year, she complained. But it turns out the White House had every invitation of inviting her and her husband Tim to the party and apologized that she did not receive the invitation. Following today's live show, Elizabeth received a call from the White House and they both had a great conversation. The president's office apologized and explained that Elizabeth and Tim are hoping to make plans for a visit to the White House in the early new year. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, following up once again on the shoe thrower, Muntadhar al-Zaidi, the Iraqi journalist who threw the shoes at President Bush, spent his first days behind bars believing his family, co-workers, and tribe would forever shun him, according to his brother. The men guarding Zaidi, 29 years old, at a detention center in the Green Zone, forced him to watch a television channel run by Sunni extremists loyal to Saddam Hussein and told him that was the only news outlet in the world that was applauding his act, said his brother. Now it's spelled Oday, not Uday. They told him, your tribe and your family reject you. Of course, all over the Arab world, television channels and public crowds hailed Zaidi as a hero. The brother, Oday, not Uday, apparently now, said his brother was gaunt, devastated, and bruised, and unrepentant, unapologetic. If I had the same opportunity again, I would throw my shoes at President Bush, Oday quoted his brother as saying. He said his brother said guards beat him with a metal pipe after the incident. Yeah, that's freedom. It's a free country, all right. He said his brother had a bruised eye. Braised eyes are good. Kind of chewy, but is missing an upper canine tooth and has cigarette burn marks on the backs of his ears. Probably trying to do a magic trick to entertain the guards. I didn't recognize him when I first saw him, Oday said. Yeah, it's a tribute to freedom. His account could not be independently verified. Government spokesmen did not answer their phones this week. The investigative judge handling his case, who could not be reached this week, had said last week that Zaidi appears to have been tortured while in custody. Prime Minister al-Maliki said the shoe-throwing incident was carried out on behalf of a known insurgent. He did not elaborate, and the journalist's relatives denied the accusation. But he is unapologetic, correcting a story that had traveled earlier that he had been apologetic. Well, close. Not that big a difference. Just an un. Just one little un. Ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, of course, the campaign made a severe turn, most observers believe, in the direction of the election of now President-elect Obama, when the tottering economy sputtered and dove. I blame IndyMac Bank, basically myself, and Mr. Dochow, when the bank started going under, as some ascribe the moment of the critical moment to when the Fed decided to let Lehman Brothers, the investment bank, go under after having kind of come to the rescue of Bear Stearns, a similarly distressed investment bank earlier this year. In any case, the stock market soon plunged. Everything seemed dire, except for one day in October when the stock market had a big 900-point upward spike, after which it has resumed its steady downward move. In stock market parlance, such an upward spike in the midst of a descending market has a fairly grim nickname. It's known as a dead cat bounce.
You know, things were getting depressing. Hard to shake free of our cares. Couldn't buy my car on credit. Baby was selling her shares.
Baby.
Guys in suits were on my TV, meeting just to say they'd met. Then, just when it seemed the darkest, here comes the best news yet. They were doing the dead cat bounce, just watching the big bulls pounce. When only one day counts, that's when you do the dead cat bounce. Well, 2 days later we were sliding right back into the hole. Red arrows pointed downward, warnings blacker than coal. You know, baby was pruning her Christmas list. eBay had my guitar. Sure didn't feel like dancing till we heard this noise from afar. They were doing the dead cat bounce, stocks rising obscene amounts. Only in my dream accounts could we do the dead cat bounce. One day wonders and shooting stars, instant karma and mini bars. Now it's here, now it's gone. Only thing growing is my neighbor's lawn. Well, now I'm scuffling for groceries, baby's hooking for rent. Checks they say were in the mail, but the mail was never sent.
Oh, baby.
You can bounce a dead cat forever, but it's only gonna go up once. Everybody's a genius till everybody's a dunce. They were doing the dead cat bounce, sipping deep from fantasy's founts. They were buying hope by the ounce. They were doing the dead cat bounce. Let's all do the dead cat bounce. Sad reality, we'll all trounce. Even while the misery mounts, we'll be doing the dead cat. The dead cat. The dead cat bounce.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the war, won't you?
Soft, listen to the war.
I could use some of that. Most atmospheric models, and we love them, they're so thin, predict that the rate of transport of air from the troposphere to the above stratosphere should be increasing due to climate change. Now, Dr. Andreas Engel, together with an international group of researchers, has found this does not seem to be happening. On the contrary, it seems that the air masses are moving more slowly than predicted. This could imply the recovery of the ozone layer may be somewhat slower than predicted by state-of-the-art climate models. These measurements are quite complex and expensive. They can only be performed sporadically. While state-of-the-art climate models predict an increased stratospheric transport, and thus the new measurements indicate that transport rates have not increased, due to the results presented now, the predictions of atmospheric models must be reevaluated. Andreas Engel emphasizes our results do not contradict the principal global change predicted by the models, yet the exact mechanisms of how this influences transport of air in the upper atmosphere do not seem to be fully understood. No kidding. I don't understand it. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyright and award-winning copyrighted feature of this broadcast. My thanks to Paul Krasner for writing that lovely piece that appeared in the Los Angeles Dog Trainer. I don't know if the Dog Trainer is aware of it. Takes a while. And just, I know there are a lot of Grammy voters who listen to this broadcast. And I want to thank you all for the nomination for Songs of the Bushmen. And I know I'm up against the late George Carlin in my category, but I want to point out, well, I want to ask you just one question. How do you know I'm not dead, too? Just think about it. If you're in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, the Aldrich Museum of Contemporary Art continues to show a little thing of mine called the Silent Echo Chamber through, I think, February. Put on some warm clothes and go see it. Oh, that was a call to action. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the year in rebuke, and it concludes this broadcast of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.4 and 5 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Available on the internet wherever you are around the world at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. You can find out where the show is streaming every Sunday by consulting publicradiofan.com. The program is available as a free download to members at www.audible.com/the show and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com and at iTunes. And it's not on No Satellite Radio thanks to the merger. And it'll be just like demerging Satellite Radio if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? All right. Thank you very much. And thanks to all the listeners who sent birthday greetings to the host. Yes, I'll be lining up for early bird dinners from now on. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Hawaii desks. The email address for this broadcast and playlists of the music played hereon are always available at the always evolving harryshearer.com. To you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Happy New Year, everyone.